you're listening to Of Slights and Men with Benji and Jacob.
Well, hello and welcome back to Of Slights and Men. Today I'm joined by a very special guest, someone that you might not have heard of before, kind of stays in the shadows in the magic community. It's Benji from The Daily Magician. How are you doing, Benji?
I'm good. Just here, chilling in the shadows.
Nice. Well, today we wanted to kind of get into, a fun, interesting topic. So maybe have your thinking brain on, have your opinions ready as you listen. You might be annoyed at times. You might be happy at times, because we're going to get into our top five favorite slides. So, of course, this topic is going to be very subjective. Benji and I have kind of written down our... we started together writing down our list, and then we thought it would be kind of more fun if we argued a bit over a few of them. So we know a few of each other's top five favorite slides, but there should be a few curveballs in here as well that everyone will enjoy. But yeah, let's get into our top five favorite sleight of hand moves. Benji, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so these are first and foremost not in any particular order. Mm-hmm. That said, the first one I have on my list is the overhand shuffle control.
Ooh, okay.
Do you want me to give you my quick elevator pitch? Couple of things going on here. First of all, I remember when I was working with Aaron Fisher, he has a card training course called Pathways to Card. I think it's called Pathways to Card Mastery, something mm-hmm. like that, Pathways. And I think, if I remember correctly, either the first module or one of the very first modules was just all about the overhand shuffle. And at the time, I remember thinking, oh, do we really need to be spending so long on this? Like, surely we all know what an overhand shuffle is. But, so for Aaron, it was just so crucial that this was the first thing that magicians master. I don't know why, that's like a tongue twister. The first thing that magicians master. Because you can do so much off the back of it. You know, it can double as a control, a false shuffle, a normal shuffle. I guess those are the main ones, but you can also do a lot. You can really do a lot of it. You can do so much of it. And I also noticed when I was doing the 138 effects project. So this is where we sat down and we chose 138 of our favorite effects from a bunch of classic magic books, older magic books. The overhand shuffle, I don't know if you remember this when you were editing, but it felt like the overhand shuffle and the overhand shuffle control was used in a good 60 to 70% of them.
Yeah, I will say that I have noticed it a lot more recently. Like you said, in editing the 138 effects project, I noticed it being a very useful move. And similarly, I guess, just even in the work that we're doing right now, it's surprising how much the overhand... like the overhand shuffle control, or just using an overhand shuffle to control cards, how like integral that is to a lot of routines. That being said, it definitely didn't make my list, maybe just because...
Well, let me give you one more reason.
Yeah, okay, go on.
One more reason. Sorry to cut you off. But I realized one thing I didn't mention, although it was implied, is that the beautiful thing about using an overhand shuffle control is that it's basically a false shuffle and a control that happens simultaneously. So if you imagine, say, for example, you're using a pass and a false shuffle and you want to sort of chain them, where it's okay, card goes in, gets controlled to a certain position, say the top, using the pass. Okay, now that has happened, but if you're doing the pass right, then that should have been invisible. So nobody feels like nothing's happened. So it's like, okay, now I actually have to kind of give the appearance of shuffling the deck. So now I got to set up and do my false shuffle. And these things are like two separate actions and two things that have to happen. Whereas the overhand shuffle control, if you get the card in there, you know, you run your card, you jog, etc., shuffle back to the jog, throw it on top. You've got the card to the top. and you've done what appears to be a shuffle at the same time. Now, obviously, it's going to vary. Sometimes when you do the overhand shuffle control, you are genuinely shuffling most of the cards, but leaving one card controlled in a certain position. Oftentimes, that will be the desired outcome. Other times, you might actually have a certain stack or order of a run of cards that you don't want to mess with, in which case you sort of have to adapt how you're doing the overhand shuffle. But it is, of course, still possible to do an overhand shuffle and just simply, you know, run cards, jog, cut back to that, run those cards again, etc., and control and false shuffle at the same time. So I think that is a massive benefit, the fact that you can do both. Furthermore, if you were just using, say, the pass and then a false shuffle, with the pass, most of the time the card is going to end up either on the top or on the bottom. With an overhand shuffle control, you can kind of choose where you want that card to be placed. For example, if you are doing some kind of any card at any number and you want a card to be placed in a certain position, the overhand shuffle control can work just as well for placing a card in, say, for example, the ninth position, just as well as it works getting it to the top. So you have so much options to kind of customize this. And once you have that overhand shuffle control down, you can use it as either a control or a full shuffle or controlling a whole run of cards. That's another thing I didn't mention. If you have a bunch of cards, but you need to reverse their order, or you want to maintain your stack of five on the top, there's just, I think, a lot more ability to adapt and be flexible with the overhand shuffle control, as opposed to maybe other ways of doing things.
It's a weird one, because I know kind of like part of the point of this is for me to be like, I don't think so. But then I'm getting like convinced. I'm like, man, maybe I should add the old overhand like control to my list. It sounded pretty good. I don't know.
I think so. You were gonna say something though a few minutes ago before I went on that.
Yeah, I think, like I was just saying, I just feel like maybe it's just like a mischaracterization, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's just kind of like, just feels kind of boring, I guess, like mm-hmm. compared to other sleight of hand in terms of like satisfaction levels. Like, mm-hmm. it just feels like quite dull compared to, say, the pass or, you know, stuff like that. It feels like very, like a diagonal palm shift, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. quite have the same like satisfaction levels to pull off. But that being said, it does seem like a very helpful utility move, maybe mm-hmm. even using like mem deck as well, if you mm-hmm. need to do like an any card, any number. It just seems like, mm-hmm. I don't know, it seems like there's a lot of applications for it, but I still would not have it on my list, I don't think, just because, like, mm-hmm. I guess a lot of the time when I was building my list, I was like, what are like the moves I most enjoy performing and like that create the coolest routines for my spectators, and it just didn't rank in that, mm-hmm. in that list for me. That being said though, I do think it is a lot more deceptive than like magicians give it credit for sure. Mm-hmm. I think a good overhand shuffle sequence, because you can, especially if you're doing a singular card control, mm-hmm. you can actually shuffle the entire mm-hmm. deck other than that card. I think that's the part that a lot of magicians mm-hmm. miss, and that really does make it mm-hmm. extremely deceptive.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it is probably on the more boring side of sleights, as you point out. I think it just depends what you're sort of ranking this list based on, if you're kind of basing it on how much you enjoy doing it and practicing it versus its actual utility, because I think it ranks very high on the latter.
Well, let's get into one that I don't think a lot of people would have put on the list, but it ends up on my list. Mm-hmm. The Marlowe Tilt. Perhaps maybe I should give my points for it before we get into why a lot of people maybe wouldn't put it on the list. I just think this move, it's not underrated, because so many magicians use it, and it features in, like, it is like kind of an essential card move. A lot, like mm-hmm. pretty much everyone that does sleight of hand card magic will have known mm-hmm. knows about the Marlowe Tilt, probably has used it at some point. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not underrated, but I think it's maybe far more deceptive than people give it credit, mm-hmm. Especially when you add in subtleties like pushing out cards, mm-hmm. and it's a lot more angle proof than you might think as well. I feel like mm-hmm. that's another thing. It's actually very, your angles for it are a lot bigger than you think. It's pretty much only really, if someone's saying beside, like, well, I don't know, you at least have like 90 degrees of angle. Mm-hmm. And from above, it looks really clean as well. Mm-hmm. And I just think I end up using the Marlowe Tilt in so many sleight of, like, hand card routines. I think one of, and it just mm-hmm. features in a lot of my favorite tricks. Like, I use it as an ambitious card in one of the phases of my ambitious card. I use it to do, I don't think it's David Blaine's trick. It's definitely just like an old trick, but like a card, like transposition where the card goes from like the spectator's hand to your hand. I think that is such a cool use for it. And I just think it just, it's so, just the amount of times I've used it and the fact that it never gets called out, it's just such a strong utility move. And super, I think, super fooling for how easy it is. That's the thing as well. It feels kind of good to do because you're like, there's no way this is going to work. And it's also really easy. I don't know. I feel like those things together make it, that's why it kind of makes my list.
Yeah. Yeah, good points. Good points for sure. Molotov. I also love the Molotov. The reason I didn't put it on my list was not because of anything the Molotov is lacking. It is simply that I only had four spots, and the other ones I'm going to mention are just are slightly higher in my head than the Molotov. But I don't think there's anything wrong with the Molotov. I love it, and I use it for the exact same reasons you do.
Fair. Well, maybe let's just get into your next one if we have no more objections.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so again, not in any particular order. Next up I have, and this one may surprise you because we didn't talk about it before, and we can debate about whether this counts, but a Pharaoh Shuffle. First of all, assuming we're agreeing that the Pharaoh Shuffle is a slight, and I think there's a plane going by. I hope that's, can you hear that? I mean, you can hear that. No. But okay.
I can hear it in real life. Yeah. Around,
okay. Well, first of all, assuming we agree that the Pharaoh Shuffle is a slight, which I do think there's a case to be made, a strong case to be made for that, because basically you're just doing something with the cards that requires practice and skill and placing the cards in a certain way. Like, I feel like that's, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a slight.
How could it not be a slight? But the Pharaoh Shuffle is, again, so useful because, and this is perhaps I'm biased because I've done so much memorized deck work, so much mem deck work, the Pharaoh Shuffle features pretty heavily, and it's just a really beautiful thing you can do with the cards where it just looks like a shuffle because it is a shuffle, but it's a shuffle that gives you complete control over where the cards are going. I don't think there's nothing quite like it. The ability to actually shuffle cards but still control where they end up is so powerful. Now, the Pharaoh Shuffle does have a little bit of a learning curve. It's not the easiest move, but if you are comfortable and confident in your ability to do the Pharaoh Shuffle, so many of your routines can be made so much stronger potentially by adding it in. Even if all you do is just before you begin your routine, you have your deck in what we would call Pharaoh 7, which is basically, to quickly recap, if you do 8 Pharaoh Shuffles, your deck will go from its original order and cycle all the way back around to that original order. And so if you do prior to performing 7 Pharaoh Shuffles, so you're in Pharaoh 7, then you give the deck a little Pharaoh Shuffle just to begin your performance. All it looks like is you're just shuffling the cards to get started, and you are now back in your sort of setup. You'll get ready to do whatever effect you're going to do. That is just something that you can tack on to the front of any routine you do, if you so desire. Obviously, maybe you don't think it's worth it to do the 7 beforehand and you just use a full shuffle. That's also a valid take. But that's just one application. The Pharaoh Shuffle, because it is also mathematically, or based on mathematics, there are so many cool things you can do. And this is something that Ed Marlowe has explored a lot in the little booklet, Pharaoh Notes. Highly recommended. I highly recommend it. Also in Expert Card Technique, there's a diagram somewhere in there. It's around like page 40 or 140, I can't remember, where it shows, okay, after each Pharaoh Shuffle, where does each card go? And once you sort of get an understanding of this and you can look at this, you start being able to plot out effects you can do based on these arrangements and based on your ability to control the cards while shuffling. I think I've talked for long enough. I feel like I could have made a stronger case for it because I feel like the Pharaoh Shuffle is just insanely powerful, and I don't know if I fully described why that is so, but hopefully that's enough of a start.
I feel like probably like the move I covet most in card magic is the tabled Pharaoh Shuffle. Like watching Dennis Burr do that, I'm like, man, that's just insane. There's definitely a case being made that like the Pharaoh Shuffle is like the hardest move in card Magic in terms of the tabled Pharaoh Shuffle is just a ridiculous amount of skill, especially to do like 7 or 8 in a row, like top card Kaizen. I just think that's just, it's pretty ridiculous, the skill that you have to be able to have to be able to do that. And like you said, especially when it's tabled, it just looks so, it just looks so fair, because you actually are shuffling the cards. So yeah, I agree. I think it's probably a case to be made that like for people that don't do mem deck work, I would say it's like maybe not as high up there in terms of slides. I feel like it becomes like, because so much of mem deck work is mathematical, the Pharaoh Shuffle is just like the perfect companion. That being said, when we did read through a lot of the classic books, they, I can't remember what they called it now. But they had a name for the Pharaoh Shuffle. That, so they did actually use it quite a lot, but I feel like they used it in a way.
Dovetail?
Dovetail, yeah. Yeah, the Dovetail Shuffle, they called it. I feel like they used it quite a lot, more than I would have thought, but maybe not in ways that it was like particularly needed, you know? Where it's like, I feel like you could have substituted it a lot of the time and not needed to do a Dovetail Shuffle. It kind of felt like it was more like a fad at the time to try and like add it into as many routines as possible. So I feel like another point is that when you're performing for other magicians, and to be honest, you shouldn't really take this into account in general. This is just more a thing for me because that's mostly who I end up performing for. But when you're performing for other magicians, I feel like your average Pharaoh Shuffle, the non-tabled version, is so kind of broadcast that it's a Pharaoh Shuffle, that it's not as deceptive, I suppose. This is, that's purely just for magicians, though. I feel like for spectators, it's never going to be an issue. Like, it is a shuffle, so like, how can they have any suspicion about it? Because you do genuinely just shuffle the cards. But when I see a magician doing a Pharaoh Shuffle, like, I always know that it's a Pharaoh Shuffle. So like that's the other thing where it's like for magicians, I feel like it's not as fooling, but that probably shouldn't matter because like neither are a lot of these moves for magicians. Like, they're all gonna know like, oh, that's a Marlo tilt, you know? So that probably shouldn't factor. But it's something in my mind where I'm like, whenever I see a Pharaoh Shuffle, I know it's a Pharaoh Shuffle. And that's just another factor for me.
Yeah, that's fair. One final point I'll mention on the Pharaoh Shuffle is it definitely does have application, a lot of applications outside of the mem deck. You're right, though, in that if you do use the mem deck, I feel like the Pharaoh Shuffle just jumps up massively in terms of where you would rank it in your list of essential slights. But even if you don't, there's definitely a ton you can do with it. Like, for example, just a classic thing, you know, if you have all red cards in one packet, all black cards in another, you Pharaoh them so that it's alternating between red and black. And then if you have someone just, so it looks like you just shuffled the deck, now if you have someone take a card, and as long as you make sure it goes back somewhere else, now there's going to be, when you spread through the cards, you know, two black cards next to each other, two red cards next to each other. You won't you might not necessarily know exactly which one it is unless you cut the deck after they've taken it and glimpsed the bottom card, so you know whether it was like red or black based on the card that came before, or if you count from the top how many cards you spread before they take theirs, so you know, for example, if it goes red, black, red, black, red, black. And so you know whether red or black cards fall on the even or odd positions, etc. But even if you just end up in this position where you've narrowed it down to like four cards potentially, then you just do a little bit of fishing. You just start by saying, oh, is it red or black? You just say, oh, I think maybe red, whatever. Then if you're wrong, whatever, you just move on. You're going to get down to the card eventually. You know, fishing as a whole other technique we'll have to talk about some other time, how to make that feel good. But that is just a super simple thing you can do using a Pharaoh Shuffle, no mem deck, no sort of advanced stack work necessary, and that's obviously just one of the more basic applications, but just a fun little thing that I'd throw in there.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like I'm definitely not a Pharaoh expert, so there's definitely got to be a lot of applications that I'm just not aware of. But yeah, an interesting curveball for your second one. I like that. I'm going to get into one that's just super boring, that everyone probably saw coming from the very beginning, which is just double lift. Whatever version you do of it, I mean, the double lift is just, what can you even say about it? Like, it hasn't been said before, you know, it's just such a powerful move. There's so much you can do with it. You can use it as a change, you can use it as like a card reveal, you can use it to, I don't know, like you can just use it for like so much. I can't really think of something you couldn't use it for, you know?
Yeah.
And it's such, I feel like for how, and of course, like getting like a perfect double lift will take you years, sadly. But just like your average double lift for so many spectators is so fooling. And for the work that you have to put in to be able to do it, the reactions you get are just like kind of unfair. Like at times it almost feels like using the invisible deck, you know, where it's like people are absolutely like blown away, but you know in your heart, like you almost didn't deserve the reaction, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of like how the double lift is. It's like it helps you with so many routines. It's so ridiculously fooling, and the effort you put in is really not that high compared to, and again, like just a bad double lift for most spectators will just pass. You know, like it will just go under the radar. So I don't know. I just feel like it's for the amount of effort versus how fooling it is versus how much skill you actually have. It just has to be on there. And also, I just use it constantly. All magicians do. It's just such an essential card move. Yeah.
I mean, no argument from my corner. I also have the double lift on my list. Got those two mixed up. The only reason I was a little bit hesitant to put it on the list was because I felt like it shared a bit of overlap with another move we're going to talk about later. And if you have one of them, you know, if this was a list of five slights and we could only do these five slights, if we have two moves that are sort of card switches, do we need both of them? But in the end, I did go and put it on my list just because I felt like, how could I not? You know, like you said.
Yeah. I will say this may be a bit of a controversial opinion, actually. But I do feel like a lot of magicians that I see do the double lift using the pinky count, to me, seems like so obvious. Like, I feel like it's worse than, like, a lot of the other, like, more basic double lifts. Like, because I just feel like it's so telegraphed. But maybe that's just me. I don't know. I just feel like a lot of the time, like, you just see them getting their pinky count, like, so obviously. And then maybe I'd have to ask spectators. They probably don't. But I don't know. That's just something that I see a lot that kind of, like, I'm like, huh. That just, to me, that just looks so unnatural and, like, obvious that you're doing a pinky count right now. But maybe it's not. And it does depend on the magician. Some magicians are better than others. But sometimes when I watch, like, tutorials or performances, I'm like, man, that just, I don't know. It just doesn't look, to me, it just looks so, like, broadcast that, like, I am about to do a double lift. You know, it kind of feels that way. But I don't know. Tell me, is that controversial? Do you, I don't know. I know that you also use pinky count, and, like, it's not, a lot of the time, it's not, I don't know, it's not necessarily you I'm talking about. It's just, I don't know. It just always feels a little, I'm about to do a double lift. Watch me pinky count.
Yeah. Kind of vibe. Yeah, maybe. I think it depends. So I will try my best, although I sometimes forget, if I'm about to do a pinky count, to, for example, talk to the spectator, ask them a question, look them in the eyes, etc. All the kind of classic stuff that magicians know they should do. Just drawing the attention, putting the attention somewhere else. I think, obviously, if you're putting the attention on the cards and then you're doing a pinky count, it's probably not the ideal combo. So that's fair. But I think there's definitely a lot of ways you can just get around that if you have that sort of performing ability. I think also if you drop your hands, depending on how natural, again, this is going to look and where you're at in the routine and what the tension relaxation is like, etc. But if something's just happened, and a lot of the time when you're doing the double lift, it's just kind of a, like I said, it depends if there's tension and you're building up to, say, for example, it's an ambitious card routine and everyone's been watching the deck and now you've got to turn over the top card, I think it'd be weird to drop the cards down to your side. But if it's something else, for example, if someone thinks the effect is over but you're about to do a double lift, or you've already done a reveal and you kind of step back and there's a moment of relaxation, etc., whatever the case may be, if it makes sense for the cards to kind of drop down by your side, if you just hold them in your hands, drop down, just kind of casual, like arms swinging, deck is turned sort of toward your body, you're just holding it in a relaxed way, you can do the pinky count down by your side. It doesn't have to be up in the open, and then when you come back you're ready. That's another thing you can do. But again, if the deck is in play, then I would just go with maybe talking to the spectator, asking them, okay, just remind me again, what was your card? You sort of looking them in the eyes, looking up, attention comes up from the deck, do the pinky count. That said, I do think eventually I'm slowly trying to transition to just doing a push-off double, kind of a Andrew Frost-style double in which no pinky count is required. I think that is kind of the holy grail. That's the ideal. And that's what I'm actually getting quite close to. And I think sooner or later, I'm just going to switch over to that. But in the meantime, I don't think using a pinky count is the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, maybe it's just because I watch a lot of performances done for magicians. And maybe that's why. But yeah, maybe like you said, if the pinky count is invisible, then of course, like it's a fantastic method for like doing it. I know Andrew Frost has said in the past, like, yeah, doing pinky count is just one of the best ways to do it. But yeah, I think maybe it's just a lot of the time because I'm watching magicians' performances that are done like to camera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't get that same effect. So it always to me looks like quite a broadcast when maybe like in reality it's not.
Quick question though. Can you do a pinky count?
Probably not the best thing of pinky counts. Yeah, that's fair.
And I don't know if that's like weighting you, if that's a bias there, where it's like if you could do it, maybe you'd be a bit more like forgiving of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely can do a pinky count. I just don't use it, so that is fair. Like I've never used a double lift with a pinky count.
Mm-hmm.
I got a card in my hand right now though, so maybe I definitely could do it. Mm-hmm. I just don't choose. I definitely haven't done it my whole life though. I that is definitely my bias where I'm like, my double lift is just kind of like not like that at all. Mm-hmm. And then like one time I showed it to Andrew Frost and he's like, that's actually pretty good. So then I have this like, I just carry this bias forever.
Yeah.
Where Andrew Frost said it was like pretty good, probably just being polite because we were recording. but. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. I do more like a thumb count, actually. A
thumb count, yeah.
And then but that's probably like just as broadcast in a way. But yeah, I do the similar thing where I'm like, wait, I'm catching it before I do it.
Okay. Because I feel like in the past when I've seen you do it, I've in my head, I maybe remember you just sort of picking it off the deck, but you do like a little thumb count to get rid of it.
Yeah, I do a little thumb count,
It must be fairly slow then, because I don't remember it being super obvious last time I saw you do it.
That's good. But yeah, no, that's fair. I think I just have this like one image in my mind, but I'm not going to call out the particular magician. Uh-huh. I just have this image in my mind of him holding the cards out, and then I can just see him like gripping the deck, and then like getting his pinky count, and then like turning it over, and then doing that like four times in a row. That's kind of like the image that's in my head where I'm just like, man, I don't jive with that. I don't feel like that's like very deceptive.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Actually, well, it's interesting. While we're talking about pinky count, I don't think I ever seriously considered putting it in my list, but I wanted to make a note, and I did want to talk about the pinky count as a slight, because I think right now we're just talking about the pinky count as a get ready for a double lift. But I think what a lot of magicians don't sort of, I don't know, acknowledge about the pinky count, and you know, maybe you're doing this right now, is that you can use the pinky count. You don't have to just use the pinky count for a double lift. Like, for example, a lot of the time, even in mem deck routines, for example, where you think, well, what are you using a pinky count for? If I'm doing, say I've done an estimation cut, or I want to do an estimation cut, or I need to move a certain number of cards, for example, I need to move 7 cards from the top in order to get into a certain position, I can actually just pinky count 7, and then that becomes a really useful thing for me to just be able to count down the side of the deck and just count cards until I get to, there's probably going to be I don't have cards in my hand right now, so I can't actually test myself, but there's probably got to be some upper bound where like it's unrealistic that you will probably do this for like 26 cards, but up to at least 10 cards, I'd say I can pretty comfortably pinky count them one by one. So if I ever need to move a certain like precise number of cards, or if I'm somewhere in the deck and I know that a certain card is 6 cards away, then I can pinky count down to that, open up a break, and then take that card out. I'm trying to remember, there was a scenario recently where that I was doing that, but I've forgotten now.
I feel like maybe shifting cards for like any card, any number is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I didn't think about that application. That was a nice application. Now you've got me like I've just got the deck in my hands. I'm just pinky counting, seeing how many I can get to. Yeah, 10. No, that is a very helpful move. That it's definitely a lot more helpful. It's definitely a lot easier than doing an estimation cut. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about adding the pinky count into like an any card, any number, because they're just always like estimation cut and then like kind of hope and pray.
Yeah.
And glimpse the cards.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, even if you start by doing an estimation cut, if you then glimpse and you find you're off by four, it's pretty easy to just pink account four and then do another little cut sequence or double undercut, but move the four however you want to do it.
No, that's definitely.
I will have to test myself as well because I really don't know. I've never actually tested to see how many I can pink account in a row. So I guess that's just we'll just leave that question open.
Probably like up until 26. Like I feel like after 26 is probably not.
I don't know. I can grab a deck right now. Actually, this will probably be pretty interesting for the viewership. I'm just gonna quickly. I think so. It's a little experiment we're running. We'll cut the delay so it feels pretty instant. Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
Let the pinky count in begin. Get myself in a nice position. 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. It is getting harder past past 10, past 15. It starts getting pretty hard.
It's what was weird, that, 23? Once you get like all 24. The way down, it gets easier again. Because then you get to the bottom of the deck.
26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31. Okay, 31. And then I started to slip a little bit. But I think really the issue is not can it be done? The issue is once you get to some point, it's so slow that you would never. I'm sure you would most likely never use it in a performance because it just, even if you can theoretically count to 26 using this, it's going to take so long. Whereas getting to the first 10 is like so much quicker by comparison. The first 10 are so much quicker than the second 10.
Be interested to like test it though, because like you obviously can just like kind of like almost riffle through them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could get a feel for like what five cards felt like to riffle, you could probably get faster, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At that point, it's not really a pinky count, though, but yeah. I feel like you could do, like, an adapted pinky count where you're kind of just riffling in the pinky count, and it'd give you a better idea, at least, than, like, an estimation cut at first, you know?
Yeah. True. That's a good point. I think also the reason it gets slower is because when you start, you're doing the pinky count using the tip of your pinky, which is quite, you have a lot of control. That's where the muscle has been trained. Then as you get deeper into the deck, you're actually using more the flesh of the lower part of your pinky.
It's a bit of a workout.
Which is, you don't have the same amount of like fine motor control over, so then it gets harder. So it really starts to slow down. But yeah, I think maybe up to realistically, if you're trying to do this like at a pace and at a speed that's not going to be just like you're sitting around waiting for half an hour, let's see, I think maybe 10 to 15 is like the upper range.
Let us know. Email us, tell us how many you can pinky count, if you know of good applications for the pinky count that we're not aware of. Because now that I think about it, it's like, it's getting me interested.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot of things I haven't thought about. So maybe, that's why you ask controversial questions, because you get good answers.
There you go. All right, that's probably enough on the pinky count, especially since it was not even on the list.
Yeah. I guess I just did the double lift, so you want to lead us
that, that well, I mean, that was...
I guess that was like a double, also, right? So yeah. I can go again.
Sure.
Again, no shock here, probably from anyone, but the pass made it onto my list. Which is kind of funny, because I don't think my pass is very good at all. it's still just... It's just so
good enough.
Yeah, it's good enough, and it's just such a fun move that I couldn't...
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have so many good memories of practicing the pass, and it's just one of the first moves I learned in card magic, and it's just... Even a bad pass gets, like, good spectator reactions. I don't know. I like to use it as part of an ambitious card routine, where I can just tell them, hey, I'm doing the pass, I explain it to them, and then I do, like, a double lift afterwards, and they're absolutely blown away. So maybe that's why... That's another nice way that I kind of get my practice in, because it doesn't matter if I mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the point, is like they're gonna see it, and then they're gonna be, then they're gonna have that. They're gonna be looking for it when I'm doing a double lift and it'll wreck.
Yeah.
But I just feel like the pass is so many people make the past look so beautiful. I'm not one of them, but I can appreciate how good it can look, how many different variations they are. I mean, there's a reason there's so many variations, like, because it's just such a fun move. Magicians have been obsessed with it for years. And it's just, yeah, so much utility can be ridiculously invisible and extremely visual at the same time. It's just such a fun move. And I feel like, again, just like every card magician out there has practiced the pass at some point, used it in some sort of routine. It's just, yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I briefly interrupt this podcast to give a quick shout out to our newsletter. If you go to www.dailymagician.com/books, you'll be able to claim 24 magic books for free, as well as sign up for our daily newsletter. In this newsletter, we share tons of incredible content, just like this podcast, as well as providing you with amazing exclusive offers from fantastic magicians. That's www.thedailymagician.com/books.
Well, yeah, it's not on my list personally, because probably for the same reasons I was talking about in the beginning, this is something we've actually, I think we've discussed this on the podcast before when we had Danny Goldsmith on talking about, I think we did a whole episode about the pass, but the pass is a very cool move, but if I want to control a card, I'm probably just going to use an overhand shuffle control at the end of the day.
Yeah, I can see that. I just think it's, I think the other, my other bias is, like, it was just one of the first moves I ever saw, like, on YouTube. I just remember it's like this image of just like, you know, they put the card in face up, and then they like kind of just like wave their hand over the deck and it appears again. And I just remember thinking, like, man, I've got to be able to do that. That is just too cool. And a shout out to our Uncle Sam as well. I remember him doing the pass a lot when I was a kid. And it was one of the moves where I was like, freak, man, that is just the coolest move ever. Like, I just have to be able to do that.
Yeah. No, it's definitely cool. And something I'm, you know, I'm always sort of working on a little bit on the side. Always will be working on. But I think, yeah, I think maybe there's an argument to be made that the pass, if you're trying to control a card, but you want it to be absolutely invisible, you don't want it to, you want it to feel like nothing has happened since the card went in the deck, the pass is a good, sort of a good move for that. But I mean, so is the Marlow Tilt, really. Obviously, the Marlow Tilt is going to end up second from top and not top, but second from top, you're close enough. You can, you know, you can work around that, especially using a move we may or may not talk about later. But
No, it's true. It is interesting. Like, it's, I think a lot of the time it's probably overused in places that it doesn't need to be used. But when it's used well and invisibly, it's just super fun and super cool. And when it's used hyper-visually by people that know what they're doing, like Z, for instance, with like the Ultimate Pass, it's just like people like that, I'm like, damn, like, just looks so good. So yeah, I think that's probably enough said on the pass. Like, there's probably a lot of people that spoke about it that we don't really need to add much more. I'll let you roll us into the next one.
Okay, so yeah, if I'm keeping my count correct, I think now I'm up to my fourth, which for this I'm going to select a force, and to be more specific, I will pick the classic force. And I think this is perhaps a fairly obvious one. People might have seen this come in. I think so far, you know, we've covered quite a range of techniques, controls, switches, false shuffles, etc. Another sort of genre, not genre, but category of Sleight that felt like it had to be included at least in one of our lists is a card force. There's just so much need, I don't know how much detail I need to go into here, but there's just so much you can do with a card force. It's a, it's key to so many routines, and the classic force is just the best force. If you can, at least for my money, it's the best force if you have the chops and you have it down and you understand the timing and the psychology and the how to actually do the force, because it literally just looks incredibly fair. Someone is just reaching in and taking out a card. So, you know, it's just a beautiful force, really.
It's just as, it's really as clean as it gets, right? Because it is just like, it's just a choice. I feel like the Classic Force is just so good because in the hands of the right people and in the right people's hands, like it's just like they just pick the card. Like the spectator just reaches in, picks any card they want. That's how it feels. It's kind of like what we were talking about with like the pushover double lift, where it's just like it's as clean as it gets.
Yeah,
like it's as natural and clean as it can possibly feel. It's like reach in and grab a card. You know, it's that classic line, and it when performed well, it's just so much fun. I think the Classic Force, like I said to a lot of people, is just genuinely my favorite move to have performed on me. I just absolutely love it. I can't get enough of it. I just think it's so ingenious, so funny. So I don't know. I love it. I absolutely love it. And watching people that are real masters of the Classic Force at work is just amazing. It's just I feel like another lot like that. There's like an Assy Wynn performance where he does like four Classic Forces in a row, and it's just so ballsy and impressive.
Yeah.
And I there's also a guy, I can't remember his name right now, and if maybe I'll try and find it, but this guy that did one for me at Magi Fest, I think he was in my like dealer's booth performances. Like dealer's booth, if you go back on the YouTube channel and look at the dealer's booth, he's one of the performances I featured. But wow, his Classic Force was just crazy. I swear, like I reached in so many different places. Like that was like probably the best Classic Force I've ever seen. And also Danny Goldsmith has to be shouted out as well when he was doing the Classic Force on me over and over. Very, very good Classic Force. You know, I think the other thing that I respect Stephen's got great Classic Force too. Yeah, you have a really good Classic Force too. I just feel like the thing I also respect about the move is, like, unlike a lot of these ones where you practice it at home, the Classic Force is, like, it's, like, made on the battleground, you know? It's, like, it's formed by thousands and thousands of performances. And that's like one of the things I think is so cool about it. It's, like, all of these moves, you can obviously practice the Classic Force in terms of timing and beats and all that stuff, but it's, like, but to be really good at it, you just have to have performed it hundreds of times. And I think that's something, thousands, you know? Hundreds of thousands, I don't know. It's just like, it's just one of those moves where when someone does it on me, I'm like, wow, you've done that on like 10,000 other people, and that's why it worked on me. And I think that something about that that I just find really, really cool, that you can't really say the same for all these other slides.
I agree. Are you trying to convince me? It's already in my list.
So that's why I think you should take it off your list.
So wait, do you have the Classic Force in your list?
I don't know. I was kind of, I didn't know whether to have it. I didn't know whether to have Full Shuffles or the Classic Force in there. I was like stuck between the two. Mostly just because I'm not very good at Classic Force. And therefore, it maybe wouldn't make it onto my list as like my favorite.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite to see him and see performed. But I just haven't put those hours in using it. I've always used like a slip cut force. I guess just one of the things I learned as a kid, and then I just like never stopped doing it. So I think that's kind of my bias of why it wouldn't make it onto my list. It's just simply because like I'm not very good at it. I want to be. I aspire to be. I should perform with it more. I just never think to.
Well, the nice thing about Classic Force is you can be practicing it all the time. Just whenever you're doing a normal card selection, you can just have a certain card that you're trying to force.
Yeah.
But because it's like you're doing it in the context of a routine where you don't need to do a force, it's kind of a very low stakes, no stakes really, but it gives you that practice.
I really need to add it in to like maybe like the first phase of my ambitious card or something like that, where it's like, the Ten of Hearts, right? You know, like that's such an easy place to add it. I need to add it into all my routines that don't require them to like require me to not know the identity, I suppose.
Yeah.
I guess I can just add it anyway.
Yeah, you can add it, and you don't even have to reveal it. You know, because it feels like there's a temptation. You kind of want to, because it's like, wow, I hit. You know. But like, you don't have to. You can literally just carry on as normal. But you've just had a chance to get a rep in. So.
No, that's fair. I need to just add it. I think it probably wouldn't, thinking about it, it probably wouldn't make my list a favorite just because I just don't use it. I should and I want to. It's kind of, I feel like maybe part of it as well is just like, I almost like don't want to like break the magic, you know? It's like, it's one of the moves I'm most obsessed with in Magic, and I love having it performed on me, and I feel like if I start performing it, I'll kind of lose the I don't know. It's like, you know, it's one of those. I almost like don't, even though I know the secret, I don't want to like uncover it too much because I find it like way too fun.
Yeah.
To have it performed on me. And yeah, that's watch it be performed.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a valid take. I'll give you that. Also, that was Stephen Bridges earlier. I realized not really much point shouting out just Stephen, as if everybody knows who Stephen is.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, but yeah, I think probably thinking about it now, I probably have to add a full shuffle instead. I don't know if you had a full shuffle. I think you kind of.
Well, I didn't because the overhand shuffle control can be used as a full shuffle. That's why, again, that's why I put it in there.
Yeah, no, it's fair. So I guess I would say maybe the modified Zaro that I learned adapted, or I don't really know, it's like a one from like Benel's No Shuffling Allowed.
Mm-hmm.
One of the coolest moves I've ever learned, to be honest. It's such an open full shuffle, and it looks like a casino shuffle, and it's just full shuffles. I mean, you know, if you are a follower of the Daily Magician, if you are not, it's just you go over to the YouTube and have a look at one of our most torturous videos that we've ever filmed, called Magicians versus Ghost Chili Peppers, where we, Benji and I, Magicians versus World's Hottest Chili Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
But we basically had a false shuffle contest to see, basically, if we weren't fooled, then the other person had to eat a chili pepper, and it went up and up until we ate the world's hottest chili pepper. But yeah, that was just like honestly one of the funnest projects, probably one of the funnest videos we filmed, and I really, really enjoyed learning the full shuffles. It was so much fun to try and fool each other with them. And that Zaro full shuffle was just, I don't know, just a really, really cool. And it's such a powerful utility move. I mean, like, I don't really need to tell anyone that. Like, everyone knows it's just, it's super, super powerful. It's very, I mean, obviously for Memdeck, it's almost like you can't skip it. You have to have a great full shuffle. And then for any other routine, it's just like, when you get to the point where your full shuffle just looks like a real shuffle, like, why would you not do a full shuffle? It's kind of like, it's kind of like the classic full size quiz.
Yeah. I've definitely done that before, even in like card games, where you're just playing a card game and you're the one shuffling two rounds. I'll just be there hitting my Zaros. And then I realized, oh, actually, these cards do need to be shuffled, otherwise the game will break. But
exactly. I'd probably put that on my list. Just like, probably for me, my favorite is like the Zaro, just because I love how like a normal riffle shuffle looks. I wish I could have learned the truffle shuffle. I've already talked about that in length, but I think full shuffles kind of have to be on there.
Yeah, and that adapted Zaro, I think that one fooled me, right? That one was one of the good ones.
Yeah,
not that the
other one. Should have saved it
till
last.
Yeah.
I don't really know what I was thinking putting the victory shuffle in there, a shuffle that you regularly use.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yep. What's done is done. Okay. It is what it is. So, now, that I think takes us to our last one. Right?
I think so. Yep.
Cool. So, the second deal.
Ooh. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? So, where to begin with this one? We've always liked watching people do the second deal. It's one of those moves we just always looked at and thought, wow, that is so beautiful. That's just such a beautiful move. About, not quite a year ago, just under a year ago, we made a video. I don't know if you've seen a trend here. We made a video where we spent, between us, about 100 hours trying to learn the second deal, going from second deal novices to somewhat having a beginning of a grasp on the move. That video, you can go watch that, of course, but we felt like that video, once the cameras were off, the journey did not end there. In fact, to be completely honest, after the video was over, did take a little break because we spent so long in the run-up to it practicing that when it was over, it was kind of nice just to take a break. But then I found the second deal began sort of almost without noticing, it snuck back up on me, and I started finding myself just practicing it randomly. And honestly, I know for sure I practiced it because it got so much better, but I can't even remember. Like, I can't even remember practicing it. I just know I must have, because one day I just found myself doing it, and I was like, wow, this is actually... I feel like I have a much better grasp on this move now than I did when we made that video. I don't know, do you remember that?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like, you know, when you just want to fidget?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's kind of where it came back, where it's like, oh, like, we're standing and having a conversation right now, and I don't have anything to do. And you use a standing desk a lot. And when we're in the office together, you're often standing, just like at the card table.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's kind of when it started like making a resurgence, is you started doing the second deal like just casually. And then, like you said, it maybe just like snuck up on you. You were like, oh, I'm actually like better at this than I thought I was, like when it came to like Blackpool. Just been doing it, like getting the reps in without even noticing.
Yeah. Cause like, yeah, exactly. Cause I remember when we made that video, one of the second deals that I like doing is like it's kind of like a one-handed sort of turnover second deal. And I remember when we made the video, I definitely couldn't do it well enough then because we didn't include it in the video. But then when it came to Blackpool, it was just something I started. I was like, I do actually know how to do this, and I think magicians will like this. And I was actually surprised just by just how much people liked it. I don't actually remember. So that's A and that's B. I don't remember when I actually got that move down. It just sort of, like I said, snuck up on me and I found myself doing it.
Did it stop talking or did it cut out?
No, I'm literally trying to remember when I started doing the one-handed turnover switch.
Well, I feel like you were messing around with that even during the video, no? Like, I remember you.
Well, I was. That. Yeah, I was. But I couldn't do it at the time. So I don't know. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you just... It's like you fidgeted your way to glory. Like, I would just, like, look over a lot of the time and you'd just be, like, playing around with the cards. Yeah, I do, like, the one-handed second deal, that sort of thing. And then... It is kind of strange, though, like you say. Like, I don't really know where, like, all the ability came from, necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe you just had like a better base than you thought when we finished like the 100-hour video.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when actually, we finished it, we both kind of came out of it like, not that good, you know?
Yeah. You know, I am starting to remember. I think a key part is, or at least a sort of junction point in my memory of this progression, is when we made 138 effects. There was at least one effect in there that used a second deal. And so I remember I was working on it a bit for that, and I remember feeling at the time maybe like I was a little bit better than I was, but I still, even now, I feel like I'm better than I was then, partially because of this video we just made, which we'll get to in a second, and the work that went into that. But yeah, and I think there might have also been an effect. I don't know if it was the same one, but it was doing like a sort of switch using one hand, and I just started being like, oh, you know, actually I think a better way is just to use this kind of second deal drop technique, etc. Yeah, anyway, without saying too much, I don't want to get too bogged down in the details. I think during 138 effects is when I sort of figured out, oh, I have made progress on this. And then since then, I've been doing it a lot more. And then obviously things kind of really leveled up another notch over Blackpool and since.
It's a bit of an obsession for me,
mm-hmm.
second deal, when it comes to just like picking up a deck of cards, where I'm like, man, I don't want to lose this. Because like that video... It's funny because it's definitely like one of our least watched videos, but in terms of the time we put into it, probably like the most of any video we made. It was like so painful to get out and release.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, so like all of that energy that went into it, I kind of have this thing where like, man, if I can't at least do like 1 second deal when I pick up a deck of cards, like, man, like I'll be so sad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely one of those. Same with like false shuffles. I'm like, man, I don't want to like forget them because I could put so much effort into learning them for the video.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a top tip. If you want to remember a slight, I don't know, put some accountability out there, you know?
Yeah.
Same with like the witch hand routines as well. I think about those a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, Definitely been, I think maybe just getting more into the specifics of like why are we choosing the second deal.
Yeah, yeah. Let's actually just talk about it as a move, and then we can come back to our journey with it.
I think it's just, I mean, probably like a massive shout out, the obvious one to like Richard Turner, where I think seeing him perform on Foolus was just mind blowing. I remember when I first watched it. I don't remember exactly when his Foolus performance was, but definitely was like quite early into Magic, and I just remember seeing it and being like, I didn't even know that was possible. Like, I didn't know you could make, I didn't know you could be so good at sleight of hand that you could do a move like that. And then seeing kind of like Andrew Frost do a second deal in person and that sort of thing, it's just like, man, it's just, it just, it kind of just formed this like thing in my brain where I was like, I just have to learn how to do this move because it looks so freaking cool. And it's so invisible and so useful. I don't know. It's just, there's so much about the move that's just so, so awesome. It's just such a great move. It's so much fun. And just, it's in that Goldilocks zone where it's hard enough. It's hard enough that you feel a lot of satisfaction when you perform it, but not too hard that you give up. You know, you see enough progress that you want to keep going, I guess, as well. I like that about
Yeah, that's definitely a good way to put it. And I think the second deal has, it's interesting if I was to, if I needed to pick between the double lift and the second deal, because I think what the double lift is very kind of, although you can use it in many scenarios, the double lift basically it does one thing, which is to show a card, in this case the second card, and then you end up dealing a different card, which is the top card, or doing something with that top card that's a different card. The second deal you can is kind of the inverse, where you might show the top card, which is the indifferent card and not the card you're sort of dealing with, or even if the top card is a selected card and you want to swap it out. Basically, it's the inverse of the double lift. The double lift, you show the second, and you actually take the top. Second deal, you show the top, but you take the second. And so I'd have to think a bit more about it, but I do feel like for most of the scenarios in which you use a double lift, if you were pressed to, like if you had to and you just could never use a double lift again, you probably could use a second deal or use kind of the second deal push-off techniques in place of the double lift. On the other hand, if you were to no longer be able to use a second deal and you had to replace all of the instances you'd use the second deal with a double lift, I don't think the double lift could cover for the second deal the same way the second deal can cover for the double lift, because there's so much you can use the second deal for that you wouldn't be able to use the double lift for. Like, for example, super simple example, if you're doing any card at any number, and you just have a selected card on top and someone says seven and you deal six cards and the seventh card is the one that you've been holding back, that you would not be able to do, at least when I first think about it, with the double lift. That's just one example. So I think the second deal has a lot more versatility. Versatility, is that a word? It can be used in a much wider range of situations. I think it, as a move, it just has more functions, I think.
I would say there's not much on our list that I would trade it out for. Like, I think it would put up a very hard fight to like stay to be like one of the last slides left that you like use, you know. And like I said, I feel like that is one of the things about the move where maybe it actually is underrated, where a lot of people just kind of only associate it with like casino type routines.
Yeah,
when there's so much more you can use it for, you know. Use it for like any card, any number. You can use it for obviously forces. You can use it for visual card like switches. I don't know. It's just it kind of like, I don't even know. Like, I feel like we've kind of just like barely scratched the surface with like the work we've been doing recently on it. And it is just such a versatile, powerful move. And the fact that you can do it from so many places in the deck as well, use a similar principle from like top to bottom of the deck, it's just, it's just a super, super powerful move.
Yeah, like for example, this effect we put out, well, we didn't really put it out. It was in like the behind the scenes video when we made that second deal video last year. And it was inspired by an Ollie Mealing effect called Rapport. And it was just using a second deal. But the kind of effect looked like, oh, I can't remember who does it first. It's either the magician deals cards and then stops. The magician is dealing cards and then he's like, okay, I'm going to stop when I want to stop. So, okay, I want to stop here. And he puts a card to the side and he keeps dealing. Says, hey, to the spectator, you just tell me when you want me to stop. They say stop. We put that card aside. The two cards are, you know, matching four of spades, four of clubs, for example. That is, again, quite a simple application of using the second deal, but I don't think, I mean, I just can't imagine you'd ever do that using a double lift, for example, which is why I feel like the second deal has to rank higher, at least than the double lift, but like you said, probably then a lot of slides.
Yeah, it's super powerful, super fun, super fooling. It kind of ticks all the boxes, you know, it ticks all the boxes in terms of a slide. And maybe this is the point where we should start shouting ourselves out a little bit, just to say, if you are interested in learning the second deal, we actually just dropped a video where we go over the top four ways to do the second deal. You can find that on our YouTube channel, The Daily Magician. We kind of just felt with all the kind of work we've been doing on it, and the fact that a lot of you have been part of our journey with the second deal, we wanted to release just kind of like our thoughts and tips, things we picked up on the second deal over the time of performing it. Especially while we're still relatively fresh to the move, like we've learned it within the year, it's nice because it does give us like a certain beginner's perspective that can help with other people learning it. Maybe along those lines, we should talk about kind of some of the new applications and talk a little bit about kind of Blackpool, that experience in terms of things we kind of new things we found out about the move recently.
Yeah, of course. So, over the last month, I guess, if you think of our second deal progression in this graph, it's kind of hit that point where it feels like it suddenly shot up a lot. And not only have we been using the second deal in the sort of classical style, we've actually started using the second deal in a bunch of really interesting ways that personally we haven't really seen much of. This is not to claim people haven't done this before. I'm sure some people have, but just one of those, again, where we haven't seen it, at least. And so we wanted to put something out where we just shared, you know, we just shared these new, or at least new to us, ideas with our people, our audience, which is why we made the Silk Switch. The Silk Switch is just a collection of techniques or ways of using the second deal in a sort of unorthodox way, ways that might surprise you, ways that are highly visual but also quite invisible. So it's this nice balance where you can use them in a visual way, or you could just use them and just have the move go completely undetected. We have a little sort of reel showing what those look like. That can also be found in the YouTube video, or you can just go straight to the page. Just remind me of the URL, Jacob.
Yeah, it's thedailymagician.com/the-silk-switch.
Yes, so highly recommend you go there.
You can also find it in the description of this podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah. Definitely liked there's a lot of people to thank, people that have helped with this project. You know, Danny Goldsmith helped with the refining of a couple of these moves, and you know, people like Andrew Frost, Biz from BBM, really useful for helping us with just sort of researching the move in general, and of course Andy Gladwin for the master push off, kind of allowing us to teach a technique that is, I think, somewhat similar. So I don't know if I forgot any, but yeah, there's thanks to everyone, I guess.
Yeah, and I really would just recommend checking those moves out. It was quite a fun thing because we were just sitting in a restaurant having some magicians like perform for us, and Danny and Benji been going back and forth on just kind of like, I wonder if you could do this with the second deal. And while there was like another conversation going on, Benji was just kind of like, oh, I got it. And I don't know, that's kind of like, that was like the first move that you'll see in the Silk Switch reel.
I don't know if it's the first, actually, but...
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe the third, then.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's the one where the card is sort of just dropped to the table.
Yeah.
But then from there, I start thinking, well, if you can do that onto the table, what about from hand to hand, which is where this is the one that you will see first, just a really, really visual sort of, you know, just tossing the card from one hand to the other.
Yeah, it's some cool stuff. We'd definitely be interested to hear what you guys think. You know, there's no pressure to like even buy. We honestly just want like the feedback. Oh, have you seen this sort of thing before? Like, what do you think? Think it looks nice? it's very much like kind of like a I don't know, like a pleasure project for us. So kind of like the pleasure's already been had. We just kind of want to share that with the community, mm-hmm. see what they think of the moves, see if they enjoy them mm-hmm. as much as we have.
Yeah, let us know your favorite. I think our favorite is probably the second one in the clip, the little flip move.
Yeah,
probably just because that is. Yeah, well, you'll see, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, it is funny. The last thing I will say is just it's mm-hmm. interesting when you're at like Blackpool Magic Convention, and I'm sure like other conventions have the same vibe, but you kind of get this feeling like any move or routine is possible if you talk to the right person and you have the right discussion. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting mm-hmm. while you're there, where you just like, you start to like, it is magical in a way. You do mm-hmm. genuinely start to believe like any illusion is like mm-hmm. a possible feat. mm-hmm. So I did really enjoy that while you were there, because it's just one of those things where like you probably had the ability before, but then you match that with the belief mm-hmm. and it creates some really, really interesting mm-hmm. cool magic.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, I guess that probably is our full list. Obviously we'd love to hear your guys' list of favorite sites, or if you want to reach out to us, it's support at the Daily Magician, or Benji at the Daily Magician, or Jacob at the Daily Magician.
.com.
Any of those email addresses will work. You can also sign up for our email list at thedailymagician.com/books. You'll also get 24 magic books for free when you sign up there. But all that being said, yeah, I think thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Benji. It's been a great conversation. Anything I'm missing out?
No, yeah, I think that's good. That's me out. I guess I'll just go back to the shadows.
Perfect. All right. Thanks so much, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Bye for now.
Ciao.